16th episode of the Reckless Dice Podcast, where we discuss Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay 3rd Edition. I'm the co-founder of Reckless Dice and your host, Jesse Gitzman-Burke. With me tonight, our local giant from the north, Lester Crow and his strolling bones.
B505.
So Lester, what's news this month?
Well, Libra Fanatica 8 was released. We've done a few things pertaining to that. We've talked about it a little bit in previous episodes.
You actually just did an interview with Sean Connors. He was the lead developer on that.
Yeah, it went pretty good.
Went up on the site over the weekend.
The recording quality, it kind of chops out a little bit at one point, but that's because he's all the way across the pond. He's got some good insights. I like Sean. I've been not necessarily a fan of his, but I've been really paying attention to what he's got to say about role-playing games for a couple of years now. He does that. He has a YouTube channel, and it's pretty good. I'd suggest everybody check it out.
That's the Outsider 68?
Yeah, the Outsiders 68. Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, definitely check that out. So the Libra Fanatica, I know that's going to be one of our main focus topics for this episode. Give us a real crash course of what it is.
Quickly, do you want me to do a breakdown now, or should I just wait until later?
Well, it's kind of like it's fan created content to supplement, you know, Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay 3rd Edition.
Originally it was, I believe they made the first one for 1st Edition, the first episode or the first issue, and there are lots of back issues. I believe the only back issue that doesn't have any information on it right now is Libra Fanatica 6, which is kind of being held back for anybody who wants to develop more content for 2nd edition. And then they jumped in with Jay Hafner on the 7th edition, and that was the first one that focused solely on Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, the 3rd edition. Mm. And it's all done by fans. It's a free downloadable content, and I highly suggest everybody who's interested in the game check it out. It's right up there. The quality is right up there with the stuff that is actually professionally released.
Well, let's get into some big discussion on that after the news, but that sounds like something that everybody should at the very least check out. Other news, we had one of our, a friend of the show, SyMatt, who is available on Twitter at SyMatt, SyMatt, generously provided fan art for a variety of our characters from some of our live play sessions. They're fantastic. I think they are absolutely hysterical and a load of fun. Those are going to be available in the show notes on Reckless Dice. You guys are welcome to check those out. Lester, what did you think of your rendering of Mario?
Well, I have to say that I do like how he took a cartoony approach, considering like our characters, as in not our characters that we play, but like as in Jesse and as in Lester, we kind of play it up, we ham it up, and we're a little silly. So I do like how he cartoonized our characters.
And then Mario was featured in the most recent live play session that we posted, which was with a little help from my friends, which we played with Neil Foster over Skype using the Fantasy Grounds too.
Yeah, I use a really terrible Italian accent because I can't, I'm not very effective with that at all. But he did a really good job. It's pretty much exactly as I pictured him, the way he did it. He went a little bit overboard on the mustache, but...
I love the long mustache. Yeah, even though you want it shortened, I think it's fantastic. I love the exaggerated features.
I figured you would, and he is. He's a pretty gaudy guy, for sure. So
and he also did a rendering of Snorri Gundrickson, who was the dwarf character I played in that session. And that was good fun, because we only gave him about... probably less than 100 words describing our characters for him just to kind of just roll with it. And he did a great job just interpreting it.
Well, he did a fantastic job.
Those are fun surprises.
I definitely couldn't ask for a better illustration. I think it totally suits the Reckless Dice podcast. Those are great illustrations.
So, official artist of the Reckless Dice.
at least for our live play sessions. I really like what he did.
He even did a few other ones too, but those live play sessions haven't gone up onto the site yet, so I'm going to hold off posting those characters until they until their sessions appear. But for now, we're going to have those first two of Snorri and Mario up on the web with this episode. So enjoy those and make sure and follow SyMatt on Twitter. Other news, the Schmottwow, the super huge detailed map of the Warhammer Old World, has kind of been dormant for the last probably 2 months or 3 months. That one has been undergoing a very significant upgrade. And I mean, I'm darn close to finishing the upgrade now, where all of the Darklands, Troll Country, and Araby are going to be incorporated to the map. So that's probably coming in the next, I'd realistically say a week or two. So maybe by the end, maybe mid-September, you can look for that. And we'll re-engage Jacob McQuaid, another friend of the show, who helps us out with the Google Maps translation of it. So that should be a lot of fun.
Oh, I'm so excited. That's like probably my favorite thing. My favorite fan-made supplement for Warhammer is that.
Well, I also, I made sure and incorporated the new content from Blackfyre Pass and from the Omens of War and all those other ones that have come out recently to make sure that all the content's available. And then lastly, we have two other news items. We did just put up we have some new live play sessions on the way. Journey to Blackfyre Pass is coming, and we've also got one of the one-pagers from the Daily Empire, which is called Sweet Marrow. We ran that one actually last night, and that was a blast. So over the coming week or so, I'm going to try and get those up on the web, and you guys will be able to enjoy those. Gen Con had, we covered it in pretty good detail last episode. However, shortly after that episode aired, we were able to get a little more insight from Caladon, who is a frequent contributor to the Fantasy Flight forums. And I'm going to read a portion of his post that he wrote, which really just concisely gives a bit of detail of what might be coming out over the next year. So I'm going to jump right in. That being said, they did give some examples from the Slaanesh supplement that is being released in December. That was the date shown in their storefront booth in the event hall, anyway. One of the new characters is the FOP. Absolutely hilarious and awesome. What is a FOP, Lester?
Kind of like, if anybody's into the tarot listening out there, it's kind of like a fool. He's a silly person.
Jester?
Sort of, yeah, similar.
Okay. They are also, so it's like the king's fool.
Yeah, kind of.
Okay. They are also going to provide a scale of how a character's social influences advances or wanes based on the careers they have taken with the noble, menial, bureaucratic traits, etc. They said nothing about addictions or drugs, though, so while we can't necessarily count it out, neither we can't expect it. The supplement also covers a lot more actions and social characters, and we will get something akin to social combat. Speaking of combat, they are going to provide information on law and order within the Empire, as well as we get a judicial champion career along those lines. Yahoo, finally.
That's really funny to me because when we get into Libra Fanatica, they really went into quite a bit of detail on that stuff.
I'd like to let's remind ourselves to talk about the any potential conflicts that could be arising over that, given there's kind of a doubling up there. In terms of future supplements, they didn't name anything, but they did show us some art clips. They also made some obvious, gee, a high-rank content supplement would be cool, wouldn't it? So based on that and the picture of a character obviously in the process of dying while facing a greater demon, I think we can dearly hope for some rank 3+ supplements on the horizon. They also saw a fantastic shot of an orc war boss riding a wyvern, with an absolute mess of orcs behind him, and a really great gloomy doomy picture of some flesh-crafted Skaven monstrosities, which are probably the some of those new Skaven creations for the Warhammer Fantasy battles.
Those aren't new. Those are just, they just created a new model for them. Those have been around for a long time.
So, but it does sound like a orc expansion and or a Skaven expansion, which are potentially tied into some higher level campaign content, are very likely in the future.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
So I think that's what we were all kind of hoping to hear. And this gives that a little bit of legitimacy. So after the break, we're going to get into Libra Fanatica 8. And then we will go into a racial section on greenskins. We're going to cover orcs, goblins, trolls, snotlings. And then we'll answer some Q&A and wrap it up. And we're back. So, Lester, we're going to talk it up on Liber Fanatica number 8, which is the second fan-created content piece for Warhammer Fantasy 3rd Edition. All the ones prior to this were 1st and 2nd Edition. Why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, for sure. This is a fantastic piece, I guess, if you want to call it that. They've continually risen the bar over the last several episodes or issues.
I mean, the production value of this thing is astonishing.
Yeah, it's incredible. It looks like it could fit right in with any of your professionally produced stuff. So I guess the first question someone would want to know is, what is it? Which you've pretty much answered quite well. It's fan-created content.
Why would somebody want this? What's in here that we're not already getting?
It's kind of like supplementary stuff. I would think that if you were to ever get something that detailed ogres or any of the more esoteric elements of Warhammer, it would probably come from Liber Fanatica 8.
Because, so what you're saying is this is our best chance of seeing halflings in the future?
Possibly. I still believe they're coming out in the Slaanesh box set just due to the gluttony and all that kind of stuff that goes along with that. I still firmly believe that there will be at least one or two pages detailing how to be halfling in that. But anyway, that's getting off topic. I think this would be the best place to find the most esoteric stuff. But basically what Liber Fanatica 8 is it's they decided to go with a theme. And the theme they chose for Liber Fanatica 8 was the criminal empire. And now Sean, in the interview, he related to me that he actually got the idea from the Nemesis card. The Nemesis sheet, I should say, that came with the Game Master's Toolkit. And they kind of ran with that idea and they developed a really excellent issue. And I'm just going to basically do a quick little breakdown here of Liber Fanatica 8. The lead developer was obviously Sean Connors, and we've had an interview with him, and hopefully I'll be able to get interviews with several of these other people. The art director's name is Roger Bartnett, and you can find him at rogerbartnettanimation.com. He is an animator. He does work on all sorts of things, video games, things along those lines. The production layout was done by a pretty good friend of mine whose name is Yussi Alharahio, and I'm probably destroying that name. He's a Finnish man, and he is incredible. The reason that this looks so good is because of Yussi. The illustrations were done by Yussi, Roger, and a guy named Brian JC. At least that's what he goes by. Graphic design was done by Yussi and Roger. The world map was done by the Berkster here, Jesse Gitzman Burke. They gave him credit in there because they used a lot of the schmuck.
I was thrilled to see that stuff in there. It actually seemed to work really nicely. I was impressed.
Oh yeah, it works great. It's perfect. Like I said, your map is just as good as any Liber Fanatica. I love the map. Anyway, and the website is looked after by a guy named Jude Hornborg. Sorry, he's the guy who kind of takes care of the Liber Fanatica website. So if you want to get your hands on Liber Fanatica, any previous issues, you want to go to liberfanatica.net. And we can leave a link in the show notes here so that you can go to that. Basically, what it is, like I said, is it's a breakdown of criminality and law in the Empire, which is actually pretty interesting that you brought up what Caladon, about what he said that FFG said about law being in the Slaanesh supplement, because there is a section in here that touches on that. But the articles are Trade and Smuggling in the Reichland by a guy named Ralph Seller. He's a British fellow, and this is a fantastic article. If anybody's interested in playing kind of a more mercantile style game, this is a must. It touches on townships and gives a better breakdown of how you can know what certain towns sell. He has charts in there that detail the different towns in the Reichland, what their main sources of goods are,
some new cards in a printout.
Yeah.
Like secondary piece where there's a lot of new career cards and equipment cards and action cards that can actually just be printed out and folded right into your normal decks to supplement the actual book content.
Yeah, there's a whole full-on pull-out download, so you can download that, and it's every card and every sheet that relates to the information given in the actual piece itself or the magazine, I guess. He also touches on trade goods, and then there are two separate kind of rules in his article. One of them is a lighter one that doesn't require as much for the player to actually track what they're doing, and then the other one's much more immersive. I don't really want to ruin any of these articles. I really suggest that everybody go out and check these out. But anybody wanting to do mercantile stuff, definitely check out Ralph Sellers' Trade and Smuggling in the Reichland. Then there was an amazing one written by UC, and it's called Honor and Contempt: Rules for Social Engagements.
Man, it sounds like they're just preempting a lot of the content
Oh yeah.
for the Senesi supplement.
Well, this stuff's been in development since January.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm not trying to downplay its quality or content. I think this stuff's outstanding. I feel like a little of the thunder is being pulled from this document, given the imminent release.
Yeah, I think we will have to do an episode where we kind of compare the two and see if they're really consistent. Because, I mean, these people did a lot of very good research. I mean, most of the stuff isn't just made up on, they did make up some of the stuff, but that comes with writing. But I think the coolest thing about this article, Honor and Contempt by UC, is he breaks down how to use what he calls an H tracker, and it's fantastic. He gives several different examples on how to use it, and that is something for game masters that I would highly suggest reading. It's a really interesting idea on how you can use your tracking pieces. And then we move on to The Law of the Empire, which was written by Rikard Fjellhaug, who we had on the last episode, I believe.
Yes, the mountain.
The Mountain. Yeah, he's a Norwegian guy. He's fantastic. He's also going to be. Well, he's been involved since they've been doing the third edition stuff. So he'll be involved in 9. He's writing a really excellent adventure that I have some insight into. But basically, this has several different careers, like the Sharp Judge, and it talks about several different law-specific careers. And then it also goes into a fair amount of detail on how law is administered throughout the empire, and how it is perceived by the different social tiers, I guess. But it is great. That's kind of like content for everybody. And then they move into a game master section. The first article in that section of Liber Fanatica 8 is called Uber's Reich by Night, and this is also written by Ralph Seller. And basically what it is it's kind of a supplement for Jesse, what was the one supplement with the Skaven called?
The Edge of Night.
Edge of Night, yeah. And this is kind of like a supplement to that. And it's information on ne'er-do-well personalities in Uber's Reich. So it goes into even greater detail on NPCs within the town of Uber's Reich. And then they move on to an article called Secret Signs, which was written and developed by Sean Connors. And this is a pretty interesting one. It kind of goes into detail about ciphers and secretive communication within the criminal empire. And it's interesting. It gives ideas for like different kind of hand signals or certain types of symbols that might be used to convey information secretively. And then the last major article in the GM's section is called the Expanded Equipment List, and that was written by Jay Hafner, who is one of the main contributors to Liber Fanatica as a whole. And it's pretty interesting. It's something that I think people on the forums have been looking forward to for a long time. They really want to have more equipment, and it's interesting. It's a two-page spread with quite a bit
So
of
this kind of,
equipment stuff.
this takes you away from that high level approach for equipment, which is, to me, that seems like the one area where I wanted the granularity detail.
Yeah.
Everybody likes purchasing things and keeping track of their equipment and loot, and this gives you prices and the abundance and rarity and all that kind of stuff and how to get it.
It ties in really well with that mercantile article by Ralph Trade and Smuggling.
Yeah, it does. It doesn't expand the weapons or armor, but it does kind of provide you the different kinds of like illumination or medical supplies, for example. So you can actually differentiate between candles and a lamp
Exactly.
or a storm lantern.
So you don't get illumination supplies. It's not necessarily left up to the GM to make up what the cost is. He goes into a lot more detail on that. And I appreciate that. I think that's great. It'll help me a lot because I'm quite a stickler for minutely making my or like minutely tracking detail. I always track encumbrance and stuff like that because I don't like the
That's
idea
one
of
thing that's not on here, though, is encumbrance.
Well, I think they just do a really good job of it. Oh, they don't note it in the equipment list?
Yes.
Well, yeah, but I mean, so many candles. I mean,
no big deal. I'm just kind of saying that's one thing that's not in there.
Well, in the main rule book, it pretty much details how you can handle that. You know, it gives you a basic breakdown of how much, you know, like if you're carrying a ladder, even if it's a light ladder, it is awkward to carry. And so on and so forth. And then I think one of the shining parts of this is pretty much the last piece of Libra Fanatica 8, I guess, is an adventure. And they pretty much put an adventure in every single issue. The issue 7 was one written by Jay Hafner called Revenant, which goes into detail about undead. So if you want any third edition undead content, pick up Libra Fanatica 7. But Wanted is the first part in the Master of Shadows campaign that is being developed by Sean Connors and Laurie Majala, I think that's his name.
Yeah, Laurie is the one who runs the Daily Empire.
Okay, sweet, sweet. So he, he got involved and
been a friend of the show.
Yeah, and he's been helping with that, and I think like because I read a bit of Sean's stuff really early in development, and I think Laurie really helped to piece it together. As Sean said that in the interview, that he really helped bring it together and kind of focus it a lot more. And that's a really interesting adventure. I'm not going to go into any detail about it because that would be spoilers.
The only thing I'll note of it is that the it seems to be developed in the style and fashion that the second edition adventures took. It takes a little more detail, provides some more maps than the kind of high level approach that the current adventures do. So anybody who really liked that older style of adventure design, one of which is me, I think this gives the GM a lot more specific resources to pull from. So they really did do an excellent job on it.
Oh yeah, and then once again, like Jesse said, they all the stuff that is relevant to that adventure can be found in the pullout section. So any of you cheesy cheaters out there who want to go in and read that so that they can beat their game masters at their games, don't do that. It's bad.
Do people do that?
I don't know, man. There are people, I'm sure.
Are they power gamers?
Yeah, they're power gamers. They piss me off. But anyway. But yeah, that's a basic breakdown of Libra Fanatica 8. If you want to find it, we'll have links in the show notes. It's LibraFanatica.net. And once again, this is a fan-created engagement or thing, I guess. I don't know what a better word for it.
Do we want to also mention that just the primary book, not including any of the pullouts, is just shy of 100 pages?
Oh, yeah. And there is beautiful artwork in it. The layout is
full color the entire way.
Oh, yeah.
It's a beautiful document.
It's incredible. It's something that you could go in, you print it out, and you could put it in a little binder or whatever. You could go get it bound, and it would fit perfectly in with all of your stuff. It is incredible.
Yeah,
I mean, considering how many people were involved, not very many, considering they weren't paid for it, and considering the amount of time they took, it was only like 5 months or something like that to develop it and to produce it, 5 or 6 months. It's incredible. And I can't tout it enough. I think everybody who is interested in Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay should check this out. And if you want to become a contributor, work on future editions, there's several ways you can go about that. You can go onto the forums at Fantasy Flight Games and onto the Warhammer forums and find there should be some posts on there for the current issue, which is 9. That's the one that's currently in development. Or you can actually go directly to the website and you can send an email through their contact section. And once you're approved, you can get into the inner sanctum and you can start contributing.
Super.
And that should be that's pretty much it on Libra Fanatica. I think it's great though.
Cool. Well, let's kick it off into a break, and when we get back, we'll go into Greenskins. And we're back. So our second main topic of this episode is Greenskins, which is synonymous with orcs, goblins, trolls, you know, squigs, even though they're not necessarily green, or some of them are. It is the kind of the quintessential bad guy of the Empire and the nemesis of the dwarves and probably many other races.
You forgot snotlings.
And snotlings, of course. Who could forget snotlings? probably the most insignificant creature in the Warhammer world.
Best name, though.
I was talking about snotlings the other day, and somebody's ears perked up, and like, what's a snotling? That's great.
Yeah.
So, you know, in what's at the most highest level, what are the greenskins?
I see them as like, they're almost like mushrooms. They're a vicious race of very combative creatures that they infight a lot until somebody, some big badass comes along and proves that he's the strongest and meanest of them. And then they, you know, reproduce in their weird way. And
which is very, nobody's quite sure what that is.
Yeah, nobody's very sure. It could be sporific, but there aren't known to be any females. But anyway, they grow and grow and grow and grow and grow until they're like this gigantic tide, and then they go on these massive wahs, and they basically destroy everything in their path. That's
so the orcs are generally speaking are from the Badlands and the mountains. So you know not so much the Grey Mountains, but to some degree, but the Black Mountains to the south of the Empire, the east the World's Edge Mountains, the Badlands far to the south of the Border Princes. Those are all like prime orc and goblin and troll territories. And like you said, they're like soccer hooligans who just get bigger and bigger. They're humanoid, but they are larger than a man. An orc, for example, is significantly larger than a man. It probably, if you were to mix a big guy and a big gorilla and turn him green, you probably are pretty close to an orc.
Yeah, they are quite simian almost. Hey, they do have that
hunched back.
They've got
the big shoulders. They're the typical orc in Warhammer has some big tusks in his mouth. He tends to have like a loincloth and any variety of metal that he's been able to strap to his body for armor, and they have a very typical weapon called a choppa, mm-hmm. which is probably a mix between a cleaver and an axe that he's able to wield with one hand with no problem. Something that a human would have a hard time picking up with both arms. But it's just a big, heavy, heavy cleaver that they swing around. Sometimes they carry two of them. That's kind of your typical orc. But to kind of go along with what you were saying, the orcs are a very aggressive and infighting culture. And orcs, you know, the bigger they are, the darker skinned they are, the more prominent in society they become. And as they continue to fight, they begin to kind of show this alpha male mentality, and eventually the boss is determined, and that orc boss is the one who pretty much begins to form his tribe. And once tribes kind of get going, the Wa starts to get formed, and the Wa is just this unstoppable tide. The Wa is what what humanity fears the most, because a Wa is not an orc raid. A Wa is an invasion force of epic proportions. Mm-hmm. These are things to be feared.
Yeah, they are massive, massive invasions that never end well. Like orcs not going to walk into your town and like kick you out of your house and then like take up, you know, residence. He's going to burn your house to the ground, destroy you, rip you into pieces, and steal all your stuff.
And then keep moving on to the next one.
Exactly.
They live to fight.
Yeah.
So the other fun thing, though, is this Wa is a really important aspect to orc and goblin culture, because the Wa is the pretty much builds a magical energy around the orcs and goblins. So this Wa energy is their manifestation of the chaos magic and chaos winds, which their shamans can manipulate into the orc and goblin magic. So there are orc shamans, and there are goblin shamans. And they all worship two gods, or one god, or it's a little unsure, but it's Gork and Mork. And it's no one's really sure which one's which or who does what, and it's hard to know if even the orcs know, but they worship Gork and Mork as best they can by smearing feces all over everything and killing it.
And building weird totems.
Of poo.
Yes. And skulls.
And skulls. The poo smearing is why I was equating them to the gorillas and apes, because That just seems so appropriate.
Well, they are. They are very similar, except that they're green. And they're not overly hairy. They're kind of, not really at all.
They'll smash their fists into the ground and throw tantrums and things like that. Now, the orcs and goblins at times are known to speak Reichsspiel. Speak Reichsspiel.
Yeah.
So they do kind of have this... they are able to communicate. Now, I don't know if that means that all orcs and goblins can communicate with humans, but there are several points in a lot of the different games and iterations where they are able to shout out war cries that are in English. So they are intelligent enough to communicate, but generally that is in some form of throwing out an insult or challenging somebody.
Mm-hmm. And they speak, like you said, like soccer hooligans.
Yeah. Oi!
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
That's about all I can do. If you guys want more, listen to the Blackfire Pass game. I did quite a bit with an orc boss there.
Nice.
We had a slayer do a one-on-one combat with an orc boss, and he barely came out alive, but he won. Nice. That was an impressive fight. So orcs. Let's talk a little bit about orcs specifically. There's a couple different types. Lester, do you want to kind of tap into that?
Well, as far as I understand it, you got your standard orcs or regular orcs. And they're still, like you said, they're bigger than a man, they're strong, they'll rip your arms off and beat you to death with them. But they tend to be, they're kind of like frightened of the bigger, meaner orcs to a degree. Like, they are subservient, mm-hmm. they're subservient to them. Like,
everybody's subservient to the next one, that's the next bigger guy.
Exactly. It's they have, like you said, like an alpha dog or alpha male complex where, you know, if you're bested in combat, if you don't die, you become essentially a slave. A combat slave for the person who's stronger than you. And they're pretty, in my opinion, nondescript. The regular orcs, I'm much more of a goblin fan myself, but the regular orcs are, they're all right, I guess. But it's when you get into these, like you said, the more savage and brutal and bigger orcs that are fantastic. And I don't really know too awful much about...
The black orcs are probably the most... well known of the bigger, beefier orcs.
Like, are they from a different place though? Like, that's what I'm not.
No, I think it's kind of equated to, you know, darker skin is a more favorable trait.
So like
in
Skaven,
the orc culture,
it's like the grayer skin is more favorable.
Yeah. Okay. I think it's either that, or potentially it's been rumored within the orc culture that, as you grow bigger and tougher, your skin darkens.
Mm-hmm.
So if you translate that all the way down, you know, from a hierarchical basis of a green skin culture, you've got, you know, like your orc war boss or the chief, who's your biggest, darkest, meanest orc you've got. The black orcs are probably next down. And then below that, you've got your regular orcs who are good mid-tone green. Goblins are generally a lighter tone and smaller than orcs. And then snotlings are usually like a really, really light colored green.
Mm-hmm.
So that color pattern also kind of translates into the power or toughness of the creature.
Mm.
So that kind of leads people to believe that as orcs grow bigger, older, stronger, and tougher, their skin darkens up. Or, you know, they kind of, Games Workshop and Fantasy Flight kind of purposefully leave some of this stuff vague, because nobody really can sit down and study the orcs, because no one can get close enough without having to fight them.
Well, yeah, without getting put into a stew.
Yeah, of course. And certainly the larger and more capable orcs are the best equipped. So,
yeah.
You know, black orcs being the toughest of the non-chief orcs have tons and tons of armor. They tend to carry like two-handed axes. They have
tanks.
All sorts of they're absolutely tough cookies.
They ride on boars too. That's one thing I find super fascinating about the orcs is that they are boar riders. They ride on boars. Are they kind of like, now my understanding of an orc is it's kind of like Hulk. The meaner they get, the madder they get, the more they kill, that's how they become big.
And the more the wah energy kind of gets flowing. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, orcs and goblins are always fighting. So if they're not fighting somebody else, they're fighting each other, which is probably one of the only reasons why orcs haven't just taken over, because they're killing themselves and just as much as they're killing everybody else.
Probably more.
And the problem is when they get organized, they're not killing each other. And that's when problems really start hurting humanity.
Mm-hmm.
The savage orcs, on the other hand, are a little stranger, and I'm not going to go into too much detail with them because they're not featured in third edition at the moment. But they are orcs who forego all kinds of armor, kind of get all high ahead of time, and paint themselves up with war paint and become all frenzied. And they believe the war paint provides them magical protection. And kind of some of the fun parts about the Wa magic is that the orcs believe the war paint is protection so furiously that it actually becomes protection for them.
What is it, like a 5-up save?
I think it's like a 6-up save on a tabletop, but it's like it's only because they believe it to be so that it works. You know, it's like it's that
it's a placebo, yeah,
the placebo effect, exactly. Goblins, on the other hand, kind of come in a couple varieties. You know, there's the regular goblins, very similar to orcs but smaller. But the two other types of goblins are a little more esoteric. The forest goblins, which often can be seen mounted on giant spiders. Run around the forest, terrorizing parts of the empire. And probably the most interesting are the night goblins.
Mm-hmm, easily.
So what do you think about the night goblins? What's they have the most fun, just comical things to talk about.
Yeah, they're fantastic. They tend to dress more so than the other orcs and goblins. Orcs and goblins tend to, dress down. They don't go to black tie events very often. But the night goblins tend to, wear robes and stuff like that. They can see in the dark a lot better than the other ones because they tend to really come into conflict with the dwarves more often because they live underground, as far as I understand.
Yeah, they live in caves in the World's Edge Mountains, the Black Mountains. They actually have a really hard time in the sunlight. So yeah. they suffer from kind of the opposite of dark vision, where they suffer penalties in light.
Yeah, they get you'd give them misfortune dice if they tried to do actions that required vision in the daytime. And my favorite thing about night goblins is that they eat mushrooms, which in my opinion is kind of...
The madcap mushrooms.
Yeah, it's kind of a little bit cannibalistic because as I understand the greenskins, they are kind of sporific. They're sort of like mushrooms.
We mentioned that earlier. Let's kind of cover that. We even covered this a little bit in an earlier episode, but the going rumor is that the orcs and goblins are spawned from some kind of spore or breeding chamber of or some like organic breeding chamber. It's not thought to be that they have a daddy orc and a mommy orc and a baby orc. It's rumored that they come in too much of a mass quantity and reproduce too quickly for something like that to happen. And nobody's ever seen small orcs before.
Yeah, or a female orc.
Yeah. Unless you talk Blood Bowl, which you've already determined is not canon. There were orc cheerleaders with boobs and everything.
Yeah, but that's not canon, unfortunately.
Not canon, yeah. So the madcap mushrooms give the orcs, or the goblins rather, a hallucinogenic and fanatical frenzied state.
Mm-hmm.
Some creatures like fanatics.
Yeah, they're kind of like Ken Kesey, right? They take a bunch of mushrooms and go nuts.
Well, the fanatics are cool. They've got like a giant ball, metal ball or spiked ball on a long chain that they just start swinging around in circles uncontrollably. And the hope is that they go in the direction of the bad guys and take them out.
Yeah, they're kind of pushed in the direction of the bad guys. And then you cross your fingers because they're going to take you out too.
The orcs and goblins are much more about the end result when it comes to causing damage. They are just as pleased to cause damage to themselves and the enemy as they are to just the enemy. A lot of their weapons are very unreliable and generally are centered around causing damage instead of causing the right kind of damage.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other fun things that kind of go along with that. One of my favorite examples, which was a small paragraph description of for the regular goblins, they have this war machine called a Doom Diver. And the Doom Diver is this like catapult, and it launches a goblin into the air, and he gets some wings on him, and then and he has a spiked hat, and he'll land on an enemy and try and kill him.
Yeah.
But that wasn't really the original purpose of it. The original purpose was that they would the orc and goblins were trying to find a way to see what's going on the battlefield. So they were going to launch these goblins up into the sky, and then when the goblin landed, he'd come back and tell everybody what he saw. So, they'd launch a goblin in the sky, and of course he splatted on the ground a couple hundred feet away and it's like green paste. So they're like, okay, well that didn't work. So then they're like, okay, well let's give him wings. And they gave him wings, and of course the goblin technology is not that great. So the goblin crashes and dies as well. They're like, well, okay, what are we going to do with this thing? So they decide to give the goblins tablets. you know, so they can write and draw while they're up there and mark down what they see. So they send another goblin up, and they go and, you know, of course the goblin dies when he lands, but they're able to retrieve the tablet. So the orc and the goblins go over and read it, and all it says is, "Wee!" So ultimately they just decided to put a big metal spike on the goblin's head and have him kill people with it.
Yeah.
That's just like a testament to how this culture works. You know, they're very, very comical, and you can have a lot of fun with them. They're great comic relief in combat. They're fun, goofy. They hurt themselves. They hurt the bad guys. A lot of fun.
Yeah, the goblins are a lot more funny than the orcs. Although orcs kind of can be funny, they're a lot more vicious and brutal as I see them. But that's the thing about Warhammer, and we've touched on this before, is that it can. It's a sliding scale. You can make it really campy and really funny, or you can just make it totally dark and gritty.
And if anybody's going to get the comic relief, though, I always kind of feel the goblins and some of the orcs kind of get it.
Big time. The goblins are the number one. And I think one thing that people need to understand is goblins tend to be a little bit more intelligent, or I would say that on their stat block, their intelligence skills or characteristics would tend to be higher than orcs. And orcs,
maybe they get physicals. A fortune die. Yeah.
Yeah, and then the orcs' abilities lie more so in the physicality. So orcs were more physical. Goblins are a little bit more mental.
Conniving, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So hit us up on snotlings.
They're small, and they have really long noses, as far as I know. And are they like children almost? They get eaten. I know they're like
they're almost like scavengers. If you had to create an orc version of a rat,
yeah,
it's probably the equivalent of a snotling. You know, they scavenge around, they pick stuff up. They're used for food, for pets. They're used to build stuff. They're used as slaves. They come in like hordes. You know, you might find one. You might find 10. But generally speaking, they're about half the size of a goblin, while a goblin might be a half the size of an orc, while an orc might be, you know, 75% the size of like a troll.
Yeah. Like, a snotling's like the size of a mushroom, maybe a little bit bigger than like a pretty good sized mushroom.
Oh, see, I kind of picture snotlings as kind of like up to your knees.
Yeah. Almost like a nurgling.
Maybe not your knees. They'd probably be up to your shins.
Maybe.
My knees, any normal sized human.
I would call them an ankle biter, let's say.
Yes, very much so. And then just kind of as a last tangent to the greenskins, we've got trolls, giants, and squigs, who are sort of the allies or kind of foreign races who are used often or paired up with the orcs and goblins. Trolls are often used in a capacity of... you know, the orcs and goblins will give them food to help fight for them, or they'll be kind of prodded in the right direction to help them out. Trolls are generally not that intelligent, so the in the tabletop rules, they suffer from stupidity, and that kind of translates into the Warhammer 3rd edition rules as well. Mm-hmm. Giants, in a very similar capacity, if they can be paid off or bought or forced to work for the goblins and orcs for some particular reason, they'll very willingly do it. And then my favorite, which we've actually spent quite a bit of time on the show, so we won't go too much detail to it here, are squigs. But Lester, do you want to give us a crash course on what a squig is?
Bouncy, bouncy. They're kind of like the, I would say they're sort of like the, almost the livestock, of
like the greenskins.
They're kind of like an orc cow, but they have a massive maw full of very sharp teeth. They'll just as likely eat, the goblins and orcs as the orcs will eat them.
Squigs are even featured in the Blackfyre Pass game.
Oh, really?
And also they're featured in the Gathering Storm.
Oh, sweet. But yeah, they're like massive. They're kind of like circular sort of, but they have four limbs and they have a long tail. And they're basically a giant mouth, I would say. And they'll eat anything.
Yes, they are very indiscriminate about what they'll eat.
And goblins, especially night goblins, have been known to ride them into battle. However, it doesn't always turn out good for the night
goblins. It's more like the goblin is not driving the squig. The goblin's just on a ride.
Yeah, he hopes that it goes in a certain direction. He hopes he doesn't fall into its mouth.
And often the orcs or the goblins will prod the squig horde in the right direction by like smashing cymbals together, poking him with sticks and nets.
Yeah.
And trying to make them do what they will. But again, just like before, many orc and goblin techniques will or tactics will fall back on themselves at the same time.
Now, one thing you didn't touch on about trolls that I think needs to be touched on, because trolls are some of my favorite. I really like the models in the battles game, and I've always liked trolls. I think they're fantastic. But there are several different types of trolls. There are stone trolls and river trolls. Stone trolls live in mountains. River trolls live in swamps and rivers, obviously. And they have an ability to regenerate. So the only way you can effectively kill them really is to use fire against them, because you cut their arm off, it'll grow back.
It doesn't grow back like right away, but over time,
but it will seal, and then they won't, they won't die from the wound at least,
Yeah. And let's not forget there are chaos trolls.
Yeah. Oh yes. And chaos trolls.
But I'm not even sure, kind of like the ogres, if those really are classified as chaos trolls.
Yeah. Like
actual trolls or not.
Was a little, I wouldn't vague. Say so. Cause I don't think a dragon ogre is an ogre. I think it's a creature of chaos, which is something we could touch on. We could do like a full episode on chaos, but, also trolls vomit on you, which I think is great.
Mm-hmm. Now, do the stone trolls also vomit?
I think only river trolls vomit. I believe stone trolls are known to, they're kind of like giants in ancient mythology where they're known to kind of hide back and throw rocks at their opponents. Mm-hmm. And crush them before going and eating, the remnants of their crushed foes.
And they'll often use like bones and things like that, and rocks as weapons.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. Well, let's wrap up Greenskins, and when we return, we'll go into some questions and answers. And we're back. As always, you can submit your questions and comments to recklessdice@gmail.com or hit us up on Twitter @recklessdice. Murph emails in, choosing character skills at character creation. I thought I remembered reading costs of non-career skills at character creation, but I can't find it anywhere. The core rulebook on page 30 suggests that you can only train career skills at character creation. Is this your reading of it? Now he's saying page 30. That would be of the original core box. If you have the hardback book, this rule is covered on page 37. And what it states is that you can only invest your character creation points into skills that are on your character card. However, there are a couple caveats to that. Advanced skills, can also be acquired, but if your race allows you to acquire some skills that are not on your career card. So, for example, you're a dwarf and you're allowed to pick up discipline as one of your freebies. You are still able to acquire those skills, but not otherwise. You cannot spend your creation points in any that are not on your character card.
I personally think that this was a design foible, and I've house ruled it. I always allow my players to choose whatever they want. I just charge them more as far as advancements are concerned.
So how do you charge them more during character creation though? Because you're not doing the one for one.
Well, it's essentially the same thing, right? So say they pay 3 points so that they can have four skills and two. Yeah. So they would have to spend 2 of those points. Of the four, they'd have to.
So you're making them do two for one.
It's a 2 for 1 thing. That's how I do it. Yeah.
I mean, I think that's a respectable house rule, and I wouldn't have any problem with that. But it does just kind of. Yeah. I think if somebody really wants it or they can justify it to a GM, it's really just a GM's opportunity to say, hey, that's cool. I had a character in a game earlier who wanted to be a soldier, but he didn't want to be a soldier. He wanted to be a combat medic.
Yes.
Somebody who would tend to the wounded out on the battlefield. And we decided the soldier career was probably the best for that because he was so kind of a fighter. But we allowed him to swap one of his character, his career skills with first aid during character creation. So he had to take one out, but he would replace it with first aid.
And then it worked out nicely. It did work out nicely. And then he was frozen in terror and murdered.
Yes. Oh, that was him?
Yeah. I couldn't get to him in time. He died.
That was one where he was bleeding out on the floor, looking up, hoping somebody would come down the ladder,
and no one did. Yeah, they slit his throat.
So Oba comments on the Reckless Dice site, great podcast, guys. As you wish, I would like to ask a question. There are now very many rules, and I would like to know if you are playing with all of them, or if you are just using the ones you like. So him, for example, he doesn't like to play with the ability group sheet that everyone can use the talent of the one group member. Fortunately, Fantasy Flight Games produces their sets in a way that we can choose which rules we want to use, but he's interested in our style of playing.
Interesting.
And first, I think before we get into that, I think he hit the nail on the head near the end there, where he says that the modular aspect of the game design really lends itself to allow you to use or not use the content you're comfortable with.
Yeah, that was Sean Connor's main point, too. He says that that is his favorite thing about the game. It's my favorite thing about the game, is it is modular.
There are parts I don't like to use.
Mm-hmm.
But let's hear your style first. I imagine yours and mine are going to be very similar since we play together.
Yeah.
But just from your perspective, where are you at?
Well, I roll with it. I do a few. I like house rule a bit. I haven't played in probably about a month now, unfortunately. Well, I've played on like our live sessions, but I haven't played with my local group here. And I just kind of roll with it. I like to gauge what my players like, what they don't like, and I'll use certain things for some players and certain things for other players. As far as what Oba says about not liking to use it so that everybody can use the talent on the group card or the party sheet.
Oh, do you think he's saying he doesn't like to use it because of that reason, or is he just describing it further?
Well, he says, for example, he doesn't like the ability on the group sheet. He doesn't like the fact that everybody can use the talent that one group member puts onto the sheet. Now, I allow it if they can justify it. So if it's something like roll with it and they put it on the party sheet, I'm like, well, why? Like, or say that you can use it, but only if you're in the engagement with the character who has that as talent. So I like do little house rules like that to add more realism, because I'm a stickler for trying to be roughly realistic when I play. But for the most part, I like all the stuff and I use it when I find it to be necessary.
I find that the party sheet's probably the most common one that people tend to have qualms about.
Oh, I love it.
I don't personally use it. Now, if my players want to use it, I end up GMing a lot. So if my players want to use it and they want to maintain it and interact with it, they're more than welcome to. I don't want to stop them, but I don't want to put any effort into it.
I use it to kind of grab them by the nuts when they're being stupid. You know, like
I like the party tension meter, but I just don't find an opportunity to use it enough for it to be really an effective tool or to justify the effort it takes to manage that one more thing.
I do it to speed up combat, right? Because sometimes people sit there and they'll discuss what they should do. And I'm like, no, guys, you're in combat. This is life or death. You have to decide quick. And if they take too long, I start moving it up and I move it up.
You know, that's actually a really nice way to use it. I like that.
I
was in a scenario last night where I was like, you know, okay, guys, come on, we need to make some decisions here. And that party tension meter would have been perfect to represent, to make them suffer some additional stress and fatigue during that period. The other thing I don't use too often, not really on purpose, just because it doesn't really come up or the players don't think as much to use it, is the social interaction cards. Because it seems like most players and GMs will just default to role playing it out, and the cards really have less of a need. Mm-hmm. However, every once in a while they'll get pulled out and used when somebody kind of like gets to the culmination of a social interaction. But those tend to go far less used than say a combat or a support action card.
I think that after reading Libra Fanatica 8, UC's article about social interaction. Mm-hmm. I think that people will start to find a few more clever ways on how they can use that. And then with the Slaanesh supplement coming out, I think people start to understand a little bit better how mechanically you can incorporate the social actions. But I do understand why people would tend to default more towards role-playing social situations.
Let's see. Is there anything else that I like to, or kind of unintentionally? You know, the location cards, as much as I really like them, they tend not to see a lot of game time.
Yeah, they confused me when I first opened the box. I was like, what are these? Like, because
I love them, but the problem is I end up throwing one out on the table, and it's more really just a nice picture to kind of show people where we're at. And often the rules on the card don't necessarily equate to kind of what I'm envisioning for the adventure. So the effects on the card tend to go unused, and they really just kind of are a picture addition.
Yeah, they're really good idea seeds, I think. But as far as like using them in the way they're written into the rules, I don't. So that is something I don't really use location cards in the way that they're written.
I'd like to see the adventures as they're written make better use, or tell you more proactively, use this adventure, use this location card here. Because they don't do that as much as I kind of hope they would. They do it for a couple very specific locations.
Yeah.
But maybe they don't mention it because they can't assume that everybody has all the supplements and all the location cards. But I'd kind of like to see, you know, for this encounter area, here's some suggested cards you could use.
Well, yeah.
Something like that would be nice.
Well, it'd be easy to write into the rules on a new supplement, though, because you would have the location cards for, like, say, a campaign adventure or whatever. You would include, or at least I would assume, you would include the locations that you travel to within there.
Right. But you wouldn't include a rowdy tavern in every single one.
No.
But you know, the idea is there, yeah.
Every adventure begins at a rowdy tavern, but
that's usually, right.
usually moves away from there.
Yeah. Okay, well, with that, we'll wrap it up with this episode of the Reckless Dice Podcast. We'll be back in 2 weeks with our next episode. Be sure to comment on the site, recklessdice.com, or shoot us an email at recklessdice@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter or Facebook at Reckless Dice. Till next time, guys, thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks for participating, guys.